You pick your pants with secret, then you left your office last night and you closed the door behind you. Were you walking in your sleep or were you just too tired to notice all the watchful eyes on you? There's the man who does the maintenance and the maid who cleans the carpets in the hall. In the gun down in the lobby through a hidden TV camera side.
Insurgent Radio Network calling. Insurgent Radio Network calling. This is the Insurgent Radio Network, and this is Terrible Tommy, Tom Metzger, right here in the bunker.
I saw the videotape with on McVeigh and that. And mm-hmm. One of the things that I was wondering about that I didn't hear mentioned, given the McVeigh case, and I know it shows, you know, government weaknesses and so forth, but don't you think it helps the government in the sense to promote more anti-terrorism legislation?
Absolutely. Absolutely. They had a lot more to gain than to lose. That's why I get so upset with the right wing to keep saying the government bombed their own building. That, to me, is the logic is not there. They have more to gain by things blowing up once in a while. But on the other hand, they play in a risky business that you know, you can push your hate laws and your terrorism laws too far, and then people say, well, I've nothing left to lose, so more and more people would start blowing up. You know, instead of doing small things, they do big things.
Yeah. A lot of the literature talks about the white working class.
Yes.
Do you conceive also of a white middle class, and how do you view the middle class as opposed to big capital?
I see the middle class as really the working class, or fast becoming the poor class. I see they are eliminating the middle class. It's on its way out.
Yeah.
So unless they can climb up, there's only one other way to go, and it's down.
Okay.
To become a sort of a subclass, you know, after the various minorities that are being coddled by the rich.
Talk about a genetic aristocracy.
Yeah, I couldn't think of anything much better to say. I believe, like the old Nordics used to believe, that you should be a leader because of your what you do and your accomplishments and how bold and brave and honest and trustworthy you are. And I think that's the kind of people we should follow. And so, within the white race, the people with, as far as I'm concerned, the people with the best genes, at least should be operating in the best way, for their race, and they should rise to the top. I know with capitalism that distorts it all, and communism too, but in reality, a natural evolution of the smartest and the bravest and the most honorable and even the most ruthless for his people should be leading. which I add on to that, what we're in is a white civil war. Our main war really is a white civil war, because the whites still have plenty of power, but the wrong whites have got it. Mm-hmm. And that's what I keep trying to convince the right wing, that they're on the wrong track, trying to change these people or get into bed with them, because they're too criminal. You can't talk to them. They've made too much profit from being the way they are. Like National Alliance, they want to recruit rich people. How do you think they got rich, buddy? They got rich by going against your best interest.
Yeah. Now, would you see the movement kind of divided then, a right wing and a left wing of the movement?
Well, I consider us in the middle. I think that we are the racial revolutionary struggle without using right and left wing labels, that we're free to choose ideas and tactics from either side and create our own. So I'm a mixture of both, you know, sort of a Jack London kind of guy, you know, that I see many virtues in the left, but I also see insanity in the left too, practical insanity and tactical impossibilities, one of which is the to worship the downtrodden, you know, because there's just as much problems among the downtrodden lumpkin proletariat, as Marx called them, as there are in the rich. So I don't like to over promote that group of people.
Okay.
And then on the right, you've got silly working people, middle class, that are whoring after the rich, and I guess they still believe in the trickle-down theory of everything. And we don't want a part of that either. In fact, we don't see ourselves gaining power with the right wing in the way. I believe it has to go. We would be doing far better today if the right wing was out of the picture.
Now, okay, on the left you would see part of that insanity also being the belief in equality?
Yes, that is nonsense, and it's purely a demagogic way to gain power. Use people to gain power, like the Democrats use the blacks. And the blacks not figuring out that they really ought to be on their own and don't follow any white man.
Now, some in the movement have used the term the third way, and I believe you have at least.
Way back, I did. Third position.
Yeah, okay.
I differentiate it a little bit because there's some real, I consider pretty wacko people running third way, or third, yeah, third way in Europe. And a lot of stuff they're into, I don't buy. Again, it becomes impractical. Whenever you make political things a religious thing, you're going to lose. Like libertarianism. Which some parts of it I think are great, and other parts are ludicrous, because they fail to deal with human nature. You have to deal with man the way man is, not the way you wish he was. And third way and liberalism and libertarianism and all this stuff becomes a cult, attempting to read more into the common man than can be read. What I mean.
Okay. In the sense of the common man being more of an ideal.
Yeah, right. And worshiping that and that. Or he's going to change anything. He doesn't change anything. He never did, never will. He simply gets excited about someone he believes will change things. And if he believes it's in his best interest, then normally he should support that group. I call it the 1% wars. 1% rule everything, and always will.
Now, the idea of the third position in part goes back to Strasser, is it?
Yeah, we have certain things about the Strasserists that we like. I believe that if that wing of the National Socialists had survived, there would not have been a world war, because their belief was an internal struggle against the super rich, and which was really what National Socialism was all about. Hitler, you know, they convinced him through Thyssen, the steel magnate, and those people that he had to suppress his left. And then, of course, they gave Himmler big power to help suppress him, which he was looking for to feather his nest. And the Night of the Long Knives, I think, was the greatest error they ever made. They try to cover it up by saying they were purging homosexuals, and that's baloney, because there were homosexuals involved for ever since the party'd been around. 1,700, almost 2,000 people died in Night of Long Knives, and very few of them were really homosexuals. But they were they had the leftist view. Now, the total philosophy of Strasser, I don't necessarily agree with all of it, but I do believe if you're going to have a struggle that has to do with your people, keep it in your country and straighten it out. Going and invading other countries when you don't need to is suicide. And that's what killed it. Because you have to look at National Socialism in about three phases. You know, the very beginning, the time after they assumed power, and then the war period. And the first part was fine, as far as I'm concerned. I don't see that much problem with it. In fact, I see the German people doing great. But once the war started, that was it. And the attack on Russia was totally insane. That was absolutely crazy.
You have to fight on two fronts like that.
Well, Russia was evolving into a more national socialist state. And Stalin would, out of sheer pragmatism, been swept along with it, because 40,000 German engineers a year were going into Russia. They were spending tens of millions of Reichsmarks developing Russia. So there was just, with Russia in the pact with them, England and the United States couldn't have done a thing. And France could have jumped up and down all it wanted to. Nothing would have happened. And there would not have been a world war. I get in trouble with the right wing when I start talking like this. The guys that worship Hitler, and he never made a mistake. And Stalin was poised to invade Germany. And that isn't even logical.
What exactly does National Socialism mean to you?
Well, it's like any other political philosophy. It's so wide and divergent that it's almost impossible to narrow it down into a small book. You've got left-wing National Socialists, right-wing National Socialists, middle-of-the-road National Socialists. You had National Socialists who wanted to combine with the Jews and create power. And they had the Jew-Aryan clubs under National Socialism prior to Hitler's taking over. So National Socialism is a real mixed bag if you really look into it deeply. And even in one of the first pictures of the party they had, there was a Jew that was a party member, and later they cut his picture out. Cut him out of the picture. Sorry. And, of course, also the big mistake was not to have let the loyal people of Jewish background that were obviously Europeanized and not Semitic, leave them alone, because they were really the backbone of the nationalists at the time. Hitler could never rose to power in Germany like if... the Jews worldwide, or the Jews in Germany, had hated the German government like they did in Russia. The Jews hated the Tsarists and so forth. And they never did forgive them. But in Germany, so many Jews had become nationalists and war heroes and everything else, and they were very slow to really start resisting Hitler, because they liked that right-wing stuff.
Do you see Hitler kind of trying to walk sort of a balance beam, trying to balance all these different...
I see him like any other politician. He was talking out of both sides of his mouth a lot of the times, like all politicians do. And one time he's supporting the neo-pagans and through Himmler and all that, and next minute he's making deals with the church, and there's so many areas that there was...
Yeah, because sometimes I'll find a quote that makes him sound like, you know, he was... And I haven't gone into that in detail, but, you know, very closely aligned with the Christians, and then you realize you had his support, at least tacit, with, you know, Thule Society, Himmler.
Well, they built those training schools for the SS, were pagan, you know. Why, I can tell you probably more about that than I can. And Himmler's whole bit was anti-Christian. Christians are good about being for you when things are good, and the minute things go bad, they throw a knife in your back. Couldn't find any Christians that supported Hitler after they lose.
How would you see the economic system under National Socialism?
From what I can gather, and I'm not a deep researcher of it, but I've got a lot of books on the subject, I think in the late 30s, it was just absolutely booming, and trying to make the excuse it was all war production is to miss the point. They were producing more refrigerators and small appliances than any country in the world. The workers got a, what was it? Was it a month off they got, the workers in Germany under National Socialism?
Yeah, they do.
And they had all these state ships that take them down to the Mediterranean and all that stuff. And if they worked X amount of hours, they got a new car, a Volkswagen. I've got a video at home about the German television that they were busy getting going, and they were transmitting television in 35, and it was big at the Olympics in 36, and they were starting to manufacture TV sets before they had to get into war production to get out to people. Now, I think I would have been very comfortable in the 30s in Germany. However, I might have been rounded up, because I just cannot keep quiet about things. I have a feeling that under any kind of system, I'd be picked up just to be safe. Put that guy over there.
You mentioned that the vacation periods, other social policies under National Socialism?
Well, hygienic programs, I believe they're eugenics programs, even though some might feel some of it was a little crude. All of those eugenics programs was created in the United States, not Germany. They were already law in this country. The Germans picked them up and they said, "Oh, those dirty Germans, and we were doing it here, you know." Well, definitely believe in eugenics. I don't believe in dysgenics. You know, people say, "Well, are you for eugenics?" Because there's always room for error in that kind of work. But on the other hand, dysgenics is suicide, and that's what we're in now. Free dysgenics work.
Okay, I mean intermarriage and...
Well, and even people with diseases and everything else getting married and having kids that are off and everything, and it's bad. You can't, you begin to produce generations of misfits. Not that eugenics is a total answer, but it's just like I was raised on the farm. We believed in eugenics. And we bred our cattle and our horses and everything for the best. We didn't try to put the cow in with the horse. And we didn't take the crummy, scraggly bull and put him out with the good milk cows. We wanted the best, and that's the way humans should be. We could eliminate birth defects pretty much if we'd work with eugenics, but because of the German situation, they use that all the time. Anytime you try to better anything, "Oh, you're a Nazi," you know. And, of course, they brought the interest rates down to 1% at one point, the Reichsbank under Oh, what was the head of the Reich Bank that did all that bringing the interest rates down? I forget right now. I know it like my own name. But anyhow, so then they were bartering around the world, you know, and the economy was going through the roof, and they gave the German workers 8-hour deal. And, you know, United States and England and the capitalists are, whoa, wait a minute, this is getting out of hand.
Yeah, Michael Storm talked to me some about some of the family policies and that to encourage more children.
Strength Through Joy was a pretty good program. They took city kids, put them out to the farm. They had, they took kids that never even sit on a horse and put them out and had them learning how to ride horses and all that. And they'd take country kids into the city. And then they had a great apprenticeship program that they would take young kids. They had barracks and everything right by the big factories. And they would have them live there like a trade school and work right in the plant. And that was a good program. We need programs like that here. Or we did when we had industry.
Yeah. Yeah, because, well, to me it seems like in the trades and stuff, that, you know, it's almost become a lost art.
Yeah, and that's how
in
I...
In a sense, just trying to find repair people for things in my house.
Well, that's how I got into electronics. I went into an apprenticeship program in high school and went to school half a day in my junior, senior year and worked in an actual shop for half a day and learned the trade. And then when I went in the Army, I was all set, and they sent me to 3 years of school. And, 2 years of school. And then I went overseas and was operating, you know, really sophisticated equipment and came back and went into the aerospace industry. And I'm only a TV man by choice to get out of the city and not punch a clock. My adversary said, oh, you're just a TV man. Well, I've done a few other things. But anyway, I say, what you got against a TV guy? I mean, you know, whether your set breaks down. Don't call me.
Do you think something like National Socialism could ultimately work in a country like this?
Probably not. Not at the way it is. I don't know what would work in this country the way it is. Nothing seems to be working. Except go along to get along. I think National Socialism worked well under the Germans, at least prior to the war. But I think Hitler even said one time it's not for export. But I believe in basically a free enterprise economic situation as opposed to capitalism. I separate the two. But I do believe that government should be strong enough to put reasonable limits on that activity. If you're hurting the environment and you're hurting your race and you're hurting your culture directly and obviously, then you should be limited. I don't think it should be a nitpick thing where you can take everybody to court about everything like you do today. Where nobody's responsible for everything. You blame everything on everybody else. I don't go along with that either.
How do you, how do you distinguish between free enterprise and capitalism?
Capitalism is the very term was created by bankers, and I've got the books that tell when and where. It's been around quite a while, or at least maybe not under that name, but capitalism is a banker's term, and banks are in business for one thing, and that's to make as much money as they can, and ultimately it leads to poverty among so much of the people because, if you're in a town and it's a fixed number of people there and you loan out $1,000, to people around the town and, $1,000 to each one, and then you say, well, at such a time you gotta pay back 10%. How are you gonna pay back 10% they've only, say, 1,000 is in circulation, well, that means they get part of your business or something, or you go broke. So they just keep eating away at you. And it's such a widespread fraud that most people don't really see it that way, because they don't see a model to show how simple the theft is. Banks loaning out 7 times their deposits. And, of course, inflation is all caused by paperwork. It's not, you know, the conservatives yell about paper money. That's ridiculous. It's not the paper money or the coin. It's writing loans, issuing, creating money out of nothing, you know. The Treasury Department's not creating it. It's your local bank. And then he takes the little old lady's Social Security check and loans it out 7 times what it is. And now they're in the credit card. The guys in the credit card business, if I was in power, would be probably stood up against the wall and shot for what they're doing to this country and how they're bankrupting the people. Of course, I turn the tables on them. I use their card to make me money and always pay it off at the end of the month.
Yeah.
I can take a bunch of money out and buy something and sell it and pay for it and put the money back in, and I've made the profit, not them.
Yeah, plus often thought too, where they have those very low interest rates to get people to, you know, transfer their debt to a particular card. And, you know, if you could just find several of those.
Every time one comes in, I say, okay, send it to me, and I throw it in my safe, you know, in case I need it sometime.
So I was figuring if you could go through 5 years of a car loan like that, just getting it off at low rates.
Yeah. But anyhow, I've got a lot of books. In fact, I really evolved into the race situation from... First, the economic thing. First, anti-communism in the in the 60s, and then into the study of the economics, and then gradually came in contact with people who were in the race thing too. So, there's so many books that have been pretty much forgotten about, you know, legalized crime of banking and all that kind of stuff, the Federal Reserve conspiracies and how the open market committee works and all that stuff.
What got you then to move from the economics to the race?
By going to meetings of people that were mad about economics, and then there was people there that were both mad about economics and race too. And then they did tie in the Jewish question. And I began to look in these books on money that I had been studying, and I kept seeing all these Jewish names. I said, gee, there's sure a lot of Jewish names here. Wonder what that's all about. And so I started researching that. And I said, how come they're not criticized? How come when they do something wrong, they just say, it's an American did something wrong. But when they do something right, they're a great Jewish thinker or whatever. I said, there's a hypocrisy here. When they do bad things, they should be talked about just like anybody else. But my opinion of the Jews is at the high end, they're simply along for the ride. I mean, you can't hardly blame them. I mean, they attach themselves to the powers that be and governments. They always have, because of their ability to move internationally and being what they consider somewhat homeless. They move around and they attach themselves, and they're good at what they do in many cases. And then when the things go to hell, the big boys say, it was those Jews. It was those Jews. Get those Jews. Now, I realize how that works, too. If they were gotten too big a trouble, the wealthy would support the racist movement, and they'd support it with the agreement, you just go after the Jews.
Save us.
Take kindness.
Yeah.
And I understand all that.
What does the term race mean to you? I know the July War was talking about the word species.
Yeah, I've been informed, and, you know, I keep being educated by people I associate with. I surely never know the end all of everything, and so I get a tremendous amount of literature and things that come across my desk from people. Some of them are university people, and this last gentleman, he said, we probably would be better calling ourselves a species rather than a race, as a different species because of our evolution and so forth. And, well, maybe that makes sense. But I, in the past, have simply said, well, we're a sub-race of the human race, that's all. I mean, you know, it's like a tree, and you get this black branch and Asian branch and Europoid branch or whatever you want to call it. And they don't want to talk about race anymore. Now it's, what is it, what's that word they use all the time now instead of race?
Ethnicity.
Which I think in a dictionary is sort of a weird word, ethnic. It's almost like nothing.
Yeah, a kind of a cultural or subcultural group.
In other words, anybody just sort of gets together and hangs out for a while, I guess you're ethnic. My daughter's got ethnic friends. They sort of get together and hang out. Well, there's people that would see, there's honest people that feel the race divide is a big problem. The liberal element that think that can't we all just get along? And if we'd all just mix, then things would get a lot better. And, if they're right, I'm dead wrong. But I don't see it anywhere in the world where people, races, even ethnics, mixing in a country over the long haul creates a strong country. It usually works against it. Everywhere I see it, they're in decay, and we have to, they're loan money and everything else to try to keep them alive. And they can't talk about America, but they keep talking about the melting pot, but we're talking about basically European people. That, sure, they had tribal differences of Polish, Germans, English, Irish, but they're the same basically, genetically, within the ballpark, and they mixed, and that's fine. But when you say, well, we're going to do the same thing with the blacks, and we're going to do the same way with the mestizos and all that, no, you're going to create a turmoil that once it starts, your country is through. It just doesn't work.
Now, when you look at races, would you put them in a hierarchy according to any...
My personal opinion, I could do that, yeah. I don't speak for everyone's associated with me.
Yeah.
I think I like all people of all races, hopefully they consider their race the best.
Yeah.
If I was black, I'd say my race is best. I think at times the European, Aryan, white race has definitely been superior and followed very closely by Asians, especially Japanese and Chinese. Maybe some Koreans, but that's another dividing place where you've got the cream and the crop of Asia, and then you've got the other country. And then blacks that just generally will never get it together. Even black guys have told me that. I mean, it's sad because you have black leaders that are really good. Marcus Garvey, I had a lot of respect for him, and Malcolm X, I had respect for him, and it doesn't matter to me how much they say they hate the white race, that's fine with me, because if that causes separation, that's good. If it takes hatred to divide, that's fine. It's just sort of a last-ditch method of dividing. You can encourage, and you can suggest, and you can say please, and then once that's all done and nobody's listening, then you have to employ other methods. So, but I don't go into debates that way because I don't want to muddy the water before I can get to the economics and all that kind of discussion. So I said, that's up to nature decides who's superior. Right now, I say the white race is acting very much not superior. It is blowing everything it worked for, everything it fought for, and everything it bled for. It's just giving it away and putting it down the toilet. And that's not bright, and nature is not going to give out red ribbons, only blue ribbons in nature. I would say that if we continue the way we're going without any radical change, that the Asians will take over the earth at some point. And they will rule it with a rod of iron. And that'll be the Japanese and the Chinese. And boy, if they ever make a deal, we're really in trouble. I have a very high regard for the Japanese, and I've been over there two or three times. And I have a very high regard for them.
What particularly structure?
Family, their family structure, their economic beehive type cooperation of families intertwined. And I believe that we should have left them alone, and the whole damn Pearl Harbor thing is horrible, and we shouldn't have embargoed their oil and pushed them into a corner, and they should have been left to run Asia. I believe the Japanese were the only ones that could really vitalize Asia. I know the Chinese don't like that, but make it a made a deal, I'm sure. After the Japanese come in, if they'd have been there for 20 years or so and helped the country and everything and brought their industry in and everything, I think the Chinese would have lived to like the Japanese. That's just my opinion.
What does being white mean to you?
Well, being white nowadays in itself is not such an important deal because there's so many white people that don't act what I would say white, don't act European, they don't act like the race of people that conquered nations and sent men to the moon. They're acting like a bunch of crybabies and weak-kneed people. I use the word Aryan because it means the nobility. So I believe that only part of the white race should be proud to be white. I'm proud to be white, but I know most of my people around, I mean not my people, but the people I run into, they're not proud they're white. They don't even think about it. They just think about making money and obeying the law. So I'm very sad about this white thing, you know.
I think what puzzles me, then if you go back to sort of the laws of nature and so forth, is it that the change in the way people view race, race mixing and so forth, well, let me ask you first, I guess, would you say race mixing is against the laws of nature?
Judging from my study of history, long-range study, yes. The move is towards separation, not integration. I believe the race has evolved separately and probably from different origins, too, like Carlton Kuhn would say. Whereas he was poo-pooed for a long time, there's renewed interest in his views. And, maybe we didn't all just start in Africa and all that stuff. But if we did, I don't care. It's where we are now, and we're moving away from each other until the Industrial Revolution, I think. And that's sort of it's what's mixing everything up and causing migrations of races that are abnormal, that normally would stay in their own territories and habitats. Like the blacks were comfortable in the south, but then World War I brought them into the north, and World War II again, and World War II.
brought up west, which is an economic thing, not a really a cultural or racial thing. That's the dangers of capitalism. It causes abnormal things to happen among people. When we involve ourselves like Reagan did in Central America, that just causes all kinds of problems, and then all those people get scared and come up here. So, I look at all the military activity now is strictly corporate anyhow, and so we're screwing up our own homeland to take care of somebody that's corporate's lost out someplace or for profits.
Now, would you see this country initially then as being more based on free enterprise? You made the distinction between free enterprise and capitalism. The way it started?
There was plenty of a capitalist type of mentality at the beginning of this country, as you can see in the central banks and all that, and the struggle that Jefferson had with the big banks, and the struggle that Jackson had and all that. There's always been a struggle between the more free enterprise working class and the very wealthy. And when they try to say, oh, the right wing said, Metzger, you talk about class, that's terrible. Well, crap, there is class warfare. There is, and don't try to deny it. And the only time they gripe about it is when you attack a rich man. You can attack poor people all day long, say they're lazy, I hire Mexicans because no white people will work, and all that nonsense. But when you turn around and say, talk about the idle rich, oh, you're a class monger, you know?
But you would see the Industrial Revolution then kind of as a key point bringing about change.
Yeah, that had a lot to do with it.
So when is it?
That's the first big thing that happened after the Christianization of Europe.
Okay.
Yeah, the Christianization was a bad thing. The fall of Rome was a horrible thing. Like Wyatt was telling us, we were talking today, if Rome hadn't have fallen, we'd have probably been on Mars a long time ago.
Ben, you've got the laws of nature.
What's happened is natural evolution has been distorted and sidetracked, and it is a capitalist distortion of natural evolution that's killing us. It seems like a good deal, and you know, people get a lot of trinkets to play with, but in the long run, it's weakening all the races. I mean, I believe in, I don't believe in corporate warfare, as I call it, but I do believe in personal combat. I believe that you should be able to have a legal duel if you want to. I don't believe in going out and dropping bombs on somebody in another country, but if I have an enemy here, I'd like to call them out just like the old West. Solve the problem. Don't kill everybody else, just shoot at each other. To put it simply. And that's natural evolution, you know. Of course, it's interfered with a little bit by the gun manufacturer, which sort of equalizes things. Like what they say about the Colt 44, the gun made everybody equal, except people had bad eyes.
So it gets back. One of the statements, though, that I often see is that nature is immutable.
Oh, that cannot change at all. Well, then
I'm not sure what that means, frankly.
Well, then you're getting into that. What is that book I read about the? What was it? It's called the something factor, everything's all screwed up factor. I forget the word. I can't remember now, but... Well, I would imagine there are some areas in nature that change, but I think they change so much slower than social dynamics that it's not to be important. And it may be clear out there in the universe someplace. I don't think human nature changes one iota.
And how do you see human nature? Is it
the strong rule the rich or the poor? Like I replied on the internet the other day, now I'm not responding in these ways because I necessarily like it exactly the way it is. I'm just telling you the way it is. And to use words like equality and all that kind of stuff just muddy the water and put a guy to sleep while you rob him, you know. Oh, I've got equal rights. Yeah, right. Going through the door, gun to the head, your right is gone. The only right you have is your brain power and your muscle. I hate the word right altogether. I wish we could eliminate it because it evolved down from, came down from, you know, the rights of God and then divine right of king. Now it's the divine right of the Democrat Party or the Republican Party. And it's silly because there is no such thing as an inalienable right. I like, did you ever see that book, Redneck Manifesto by Jim Goad?
Yes.
I like
yes,
that.
Yeah,
and I like
yeah,
Ragnar yeah. Redbeard, Redbeard might is right. Sort of slaps you upside the head and say, you know, this is the way it is. You may want it to be somewhere way else, but this is the way it is.
And under capitalism, then, in a sense, the strong are strong because they control the finances.
And they skew the democratic process that they love to use to make sure they keep it, while pretending they're losing all their money because of democracy. They're actually gaining more than they ever had.
Now, going back, you mentioned the role of government. I'm thinking about Hobbes and man in the state of nature and needing a strong state and so forth. You would, under other circumstances than this particular government or that, see a need for government.
I'm not an anarchist.
Yeah.
Because I think that becomes a religion. The righteousness of the poor does not affect me either. You know, because most poor, I mean, I respect poor people, and I talk to them all the time, and I like to hang out with working class people. But most of them, if they became rich overnight, would be just like the people at the top. They just want their chance to get even. So you gotta take that with a grain of salt, too. Like I said, Marx called those the lumpkin proletariat. They were even below the proletariat.
Yeah. But then government would play a role.
Oh, yeah, some type of government. I believe in, you know, freedom of choice, where ideally there were areas of the world where people feel one way, and mostly and racially would go there. Oh, you can do whatever you want. Just leave us alone. But they won't let you do that. There's no country in the world that will let you do that. They say, oh, if you don't like it, go someplace. Okay, how about Utah or Nevada? Oh, no, not there. Well, how about a little town in Utah? No, 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 no. If you do that, we'll kill you. So, it's a quandary. Because you need organization of some type, and you need a type of, like Audrey calls the evolution of social contract, but it can't be so rigid, and that's the problem. Look at Mussolini. Mussolini's ideas were great up until he'd been in power for, 15 years or better, and then suddenly he becomes a conservative. Before that, he went from socialist to fascist. But if people would read what early fascism was all about, it was a great idea. It was ongoing evolution and revolution in everything, never becoming stagnant, never becoming conservative, the arts, the science, everything moving forward all the time. But nobody ever talks about that. They just talk about, well, you want to kill Haile Selassie, you know. So I was impressed by some of those early fascist writers, probably more so than the National Socialist writers. But the state is a big problem, you know. It's trying to keep a lot of people happy, or at least not at your throat. And that's very difficult no matter how good a government you got. I don't know. It's a tough answer.
But, okay, this would go back then, though, if it were a more homogeneous racially.
I believe you're always going to have problems, but I think your problems are less in a homogeneous society. You're still going to have the problems of fraud, you know, stealing, murder, everything's going to be there. But at least you have a more... Usually you can come together and come up with a better solution than if you bring in all the other races and all the other religions and all that kind of stuff. Pretty soon the country becomes ungovernable. This country is becoming ungovernable. It's just at its start. It's just starting. But they'll try to make everybody happy, and they can't because you've got too many divergent views. And all it needs is a big economic downturn, and they really got problems. I mean, these capitalists really have to keep it moving, man. They got to keep the goodies flowing, man. Come on, they're gaining on us. If we stuff the rest, they're gonna get us.
But in that case, do you think then it was a wise decision with the capitalists to send so much of the industry abroad?
Capitalists think in less than 10-year increments. Almost none of them think in 20, 30, 40 years. And that's why Japanese are smarter, people like that. They always assume that they can go into an area and use all the cheap labor and deplete all the everything, and if there's an uprising against them, oh, well, we'll send all these poor American boys over there. They'll be the bully boys for us and kill off the opposition. In other words, that's all the military is now, is simply thugs for the corporates. If the oil's in trouble, no sweat. We'll send all these unemployed guys over. You know, there's too many of them anyhow. We can't put them all in prison, so we get a few of them killed. That's all right. So they always depend on the taxpayers bailing them out, no matter what they do, by using the military. Now, if they weren't insured that, they wouldn't be doing that. See, what I advocate is that the uprisings in this country burn these plants down. I say, I support all the revolutionary groups in all those countries. I say, God, burn those corporate plants down. And they got to come back home and give jobs to Americans. I mean, burn out the Macleodori system. And I like to agitate behind the scenes the Mexican workers. Mm-hmm. They're screwing you like they want to screw us. Torch the place.
Would you say, too, then, you're saying about the American taxpayer paying in this country, then they pay through a welfare system, too?
They get it both ways. They lose the jobs, and then if people want welfare, then they got to pay for that, too. I heard a woman call in on the radio yesterday that was, she was in the computer industry, and she says, there's hundreds of thousands of us out here that got laid off, but yet they're importing people from all over the world. They won't call us. We send in our resumes. We can't even get a job in these places. And so this was a conservative black man that was on taking the place of Rush Limbaugh, who I can't stand. But anyhow, he's a conservative black man, and he finally, his answer was, well, will they work for less? Yeah. Well, then you should work for less.
Oh, well, my answer to that would be, well, should I go live in a tree too, in a cardboard box? What did we fight all these wars for, a so-called nation, and all these people that have been patriotic and paid their dues? Does citizenship mean nothing? You know, and it doesn't mean anything anymore.
You mentioned before about social dynamics, mm-hmm. which our sociologists would love to hear. And you're saying about Christianization in Europe mm-hmm. as part of those social dynamics. Would you elaborate more on that?
Well, I think the Christianization of Europe was the worst thing that ever happened to Europe. It was spreading the Semitic myths into Europe, and the only thing that saved Europe under Christianity was the fact that they didn't act like Christians. They still maintained their heathen ways. So I believe that I think religion's probably equal to the economic problems of the world. They blame racism, but religion causes far more problems than racism. And what they call racism in the old days was the fact that, like the British mercantile system would, or even the Spanish, they would send the explorers out, and along with them were the people who were going to be looking for the gold, and then right with them were the priests. And killing everybody wouldn't become a Christian. And then they called that racism. That wasn't really racism, because like the American Indians here, the American Indian said, oh, I'll be a Christian, then he was okay. So it wasn't good Indians or dead Indians. It was a schizophrenic program we had in this country. Half of the people were saying, we'll kill all the Indians and run them out, and the other half saying, let's make them Christians. So most of the traditional stuff that's called racism was not racism at all. It was mercantilism. And they would sometimes use a racist argument to enforce their robbery. But I don't buy that. I'm a racist, but I'm not an exploiter, imperialist.
And the mercantilists would have set up their economic system.
No, it, as they did all over the world, it was strictly a slave operation on the Caribbean and all over the world. And it's still around today. With minor changes. Back then, you knew you were a slave. Now today, you said, well, am I or ain't I? See, that's, I always say, discrimination is the only thing that differentiates a person from a slave. A slave cannot discriminate about anything. Only a free man can discriminate on any subject. And if you can't discriminate, you're not free. Even if you don't like what they discriminate about. In fact, I used to be told if I smoke a certain cigarette or drive the right kind of car, I was a discriminating person. Now they'd never say that in an ad.
What happened to bring on, in this country, the civil rights movement? It's part of getting that social dynamics.
It was a very cynical ploy to appease black Africa is what it's about. It was about at the time, in the height of the Cold War, we were tugging at African people. Which was a silly deal, but they did. They thought that they could win the minds and hearts of the African people to capitalism or to communism. And so it was a big battleground in which, you know, you had Lumumba, a nationalist, got killed because of it. Oh, yeah, that was the cynical behind-the-scenes reason for the civil rights movement. To put on the happy face, we're going to take care of all these injustices in the United States, and we're going to be good guys, and black people in Africa should love us. The other part of it was that the Civil Rights Bill would never even have been passed. It had been tied to a much more important, or there was a much more important rider to the bill, which had to do with water rights in the West, that once that became part of that overall law, it made tens of millions for wealthy people involved in big water projects in the West. That's another reason it was added on to the Civil Rights Bill. The people voted for Civil Rights Bill that didn't care anything about the Civil Rights. They just wanted to get that boondoggle going, to get making a lot of money off the water. And they built these giant water projects throughout the West. It was tied on to the Civil Rights Bill. You know, if you watch and you listen closely, you pick up little bits and pieces that, you know, and you say, "What? Wait a minute. Whoa, what did that? I didn't read that notebook." No, it, and also, those white guys, you know, they're awful uppity. They demand decent wages. They demand decent housing. They're liable to strike, you know. Why don't we dilute their strength a little and incorporate more and more blacks into the situation? And so there was a lot of that going on.
What about the idea within, well, the working class, the labor movement, sort of a idea of divide and conquer?
Well, the opposition would say divide and conquer, but I think that is, you know, I think because you are a racist doesn't mean that you want to divide and conquer. You don't want to be together, period. So you don't have to divide. But in the unions, of course, who was it? Debs, he wanted to bring the blacks into the union. But interestingly enough, it was Samuel Gompers, the Jewish guy, who supported the all-white union. Not the United Auto Workers, but the AFL, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And that was a great time in history, that struggle. Kids today, or even the last generation, they don't even have any idea how we got here. And how we would be a slave plantation society, period, if men didn't go on the street and give their lives and fight and die. We had a have a little war against the government, almost a revolution, to get the living condition. You don't think those guys gave it out of the goodness of their heart. Only in Germany did they do it out of the goodness of their heart, 8 hour day. And I like all the movies like Matuan and Molly Maguire's. There was a movie not too old from the 70s. This took place at Hardin County. It's been on TV lately. Hardin County Wars, mine owners, like that. So people just—they forget all of the white people forget all the struggle of their fathers, their grandfathers. And in our paper this month, we got a big article. Was it last month on how the IWW was treated in San Diego back in the turn of the century? The brutality that the state brought down on them.
Yeah, there were obvious. What about the cover of your August edition? We saw that sign when we were driving down.
Yeah, that's our, that's a satire.
Going, what does this mean?
That's our satire to it, you know. They got to watch out for the Mexicans running across the highway as soon as we put crosshairs. In other words, run for the border and get them out of here.
So that really is what that road sign means, is watch out for the...
Yeah, because the dumb guys, they go running right across the freeway, you know, six or eight of them, they get run over all the time.
Okay, we wondered if that might be a possibility.
I had to explain that to some people around the country.
Alien crosses
instead of airplanes. Yeah. Yeah. It's more prevalent down south, more closer to the other border. This we've already ceded. They say they want 100 miles. They've already really got it, you know, or shortly will. These border checkpoints up here are almost delineating the new border. All this NAFTA government, all that stuff is all leading. They're divvying it all up. People, many people are too stupid to realize what they're doing. All for economics. See, 25 years ago when I was running for supervisor in this county, they were promoting a World Trade Center here, a World Trade District. It'd be a free trade. So all this has been working for the newspapers. They've been building towards changing the borders and all that for a long time. And I fought them back then, and it was the liberals on the one side with the pie-in-the-sky ideas, and it was the rich on the other end that were using false compassion to cover their thievery.
Yeah, it strikes me that after all that has happened, what we call liberals don't think more about the rich and the exploitation. And maybe because some of them are rich, I suppose, but not all of them.
It's hard to find a liberal.
Yeah.
I say pretty soon we're going to have to find one, put him in the museum, because there's so few left. You know, and conservatives too. You know, these names mean nothing anymore. The liberals now, the so-called liberals, are the conservatives. They create a crappy situation, and then they want to conserve it. So why do we call them liberals? And the conservatives should never want to conserve what's going on, so why do we call them conservatives? The labels will get you every time.
Yeah. If you were put in charge of race relations,
oh boy,
in this country, what would you do first?
Well, first place, I'd be fair. Much fairer than the cynicism of the people behind that stuff now. I'd be straight out with what I believe and what I would like to see done. I'd say, look, I don't want to rob you. I know you've contributed, but we want to have living space for the white European people. Now, we've got almost, you know, Europe is gradually going. We've got some in Australia, fine. We got a little bit we're hanging on in South Africa. Other than that, we're going down the tube. So, hey, why don't we help you economically, and you have your territory, and we'll have our territory. And we won't oppress you, rob you, and we don't want you invading or polluting our area either. And we'd gradually talk about it. These are things I tried to talk about to blacks for years. To all of us go against the government and then divide up the spoils. We'll figure out the little things later. But right now, unless we can get this monkey off our back, none of us are going to get what we want. Now, I believe in dialogue and diplomacy, but if it didn't work, then it would have to be done by force. And I would be ruthless. I'd give everybody a perfect opportunity to make some rational decision here, other than doing what we're doing. And then it would be other methods employed. As humane as possible, but they would be employed. I mean, I could move with a few companies of Marines and the railroad tracks. I could move the majority of illegal aliens in this state in 6 months back to Mexico.
What do you think would be the reaction of the Mexicans? I mean, you might say,
well,
you don't care.
If you remember how Pakistan was, millions of people in Pakistan
and the world didn't come to an end. Well, if you explain it nicely, and say, no, get on the train. If you've got any money in the bank, so let's get your money out. If you've got property, you want to sell your property, fine, we'll have an agency take care of that. We'll even help you resettle in Mexico. In other words, every job we save here, we could afford to give the money down there to put another American back to work. So it wouldn't be out of sight to indemnify them. But if the hard type would not take that for an answer, well, they would be taken care of. They would be forcefully removed. Now, there comes a time when things get so screwed up. It reminds me of Napoleon during the Revolution, standing in the square there. Band-aids if you want to cure something completely. You can't put a band-aid on a cancer. And the worse it goes, the worse the cure is going to be. Whether it's natural or by human means. See, we're running out of water. Nobody wants to listen. The aquifers under Mexico City are running dry. They're having big water problems on the border. Water tables all over the United States are dropping, but we're developing more and more and more. Take on more and more people. China, 90% of the water in China comes from about one-fifth of the country in the northern part. And that water level is dropping about 6 feet a year. Now what happens when the Chinese, a billion people, get thirsty? They're going to go looking for water. What's going to happen if suddenly there's no water in Mexico City? They're going to march, like anybody does, to survive. And sometime there's going to be thousands, maybe more, people, just landless, homeless, foodless people start marching.
They just go.
Hey, food there. Me hungry. Me march. Me got club. You kill me, okay, but another will climb over my body. You know, the will to survive is the strongest. And it's like the book, The Camp of the Saints, if you've ever heard of it, written by Jean Raspel of France. And it was about a time when the masses of Southeast Asia and India started going towards Europe, that they were able to get a bunch of old ships and they loaded them with every person they get on them. And first, the West sort of made a mockery of it, but then they finally went all the way around South Africa, and the South Africans didn't stop them. They landed on the beaches in the Mediterranean in southern France and overwhelmed the French nation just by masses of them coming ashore. And the fiction book that he wrote is coming true. Of course, Africa might turn out to be the new land. You know, 6,000 black Africans, a day or a week are dying. Somebody said upwards, maybe up to 40,000. Have a pretty big birth rate, but again, so we're looking at events that are just staggering, and they're right there, you know. And we're just like the people were in the 19th century that had no idea, could not see what was going on in the 20th century. And we're the same way through the 20th century, and we cannot possibly fathom what's coming at us. Oh, The Chaos Factor. That was the name of that book I was trying to think of.
Oh.
And we which has to do with a little bit of different interpretation of evolution and things. And these guys think they're going to operate like business as usual. That's impossible. And, of course, they actually foment overpopulation to create consumers. That's all we're becoming, as consumers. We are farmed as consumers. That's what we're here for. You get out of line any other way, they throw you the can. Just consume, boy.
Once you move the populations, then what would you do kind of next?
That's for other generations to figure out. I don't try to set myself up as a cult leader. I think that the natural order of events would kick in. I mean, the people who are the smartest and the cleverest and so forth, but every culture would climb to the top. They'd still have problems, but I think we could lessen the problems by doing these things. Who knows? I mean, what would happen then? I just like to shuffle the deck a little bit and see what will happen.
Explain what separatism means to you.
Well, it means territorial imperative and the ability to define your cultural and racial bounds, and but then within that framework be able to carry on trade and a certain amount of relations with people of other countries and other races, but with one rule: this is the white land and white European land, and we will use eugenics to improve our race even more, and you can come here and trade. With you, and you can stay here for a certain amount of time, but any type of copulation with a white person, if you're not white, would be a capital crime. Within the context of that separatism, we should have as much freedom of choice as possible. They could have nude beaches in my territory. Yeah. I was the only guy that supported nude beaches when I ran for Congress. None of that any guts. I'm not going to a nude beach, but if you want to go to a nude beach, what do I care? If you want to smoke pot, I don't care.
I know you see religion as destructive.
Because of its immense ability to control. It's a control mechanism. And that it controls through myth. And controlling through myth is a very dangerous thing to do.
But couldn't it also help mobilize for the cause?
Only in a short-run way, but, I mean...
See, only a short run.
Yeah, you can't follow something that's not true or is mythical and base your whole future on it. I couldn't. If I see something that's not true, I cannot support it. I mean, I was even an identity minister, but I researched and found out it was not true. And beyond that, I found out the whole damn thing wasn't true. And it's all simply Mithraism that has been perverted into... man worship thing, which Mithraism was a pretty good religion, a religion of the Romans, but it was a evolution of the worship of the sun, which is very logical. Everyone should revere the sun. I call the sun my all father and the earth my all mother, and that's it. I don't go looking for any more spooks. Everything else is somebody wanting to use control.
course, the other thing that helped Christianity along was it was not only conversion by the sword, but in Christianity you could do all these foul things and be forgiven. In Mithraism, you could never be forgiven if you were a bad guy. Not officially, okay. Anyhow.
But doesn't it, in a sense, wouldn't religion also help give a sense of identity?
Well, look at it this way. There's a lot of identity people still in this struggle around that I'm in, but a lot of them are fighting me because I'm not identity, so it becomes a cult. They're not saying race is number one. Some of them do. But all the leaders of identity see me as a threat. Could you look in that camera and see if it's pointed at me? It looks like it's over my shoulder.
No, I can see you.
Okay.
Yep, you're a little bit more this way, but
yeah.
You're on.
Yeah. But many identity followers sort of put aside my disagreement on religion, and we work together. Because we don't demand anybody be of any religion or not religion. I just say that's the way I feel, and if I can logically convince you, fine. If not, you can believe whatever you want, as long as it doesn't get in the way of the racial struggle.
Which goes back to the statement, my race is my religion.
Right, so, well, so I use
race
that.
Race is paramount.
Yes, race is number one. Everything else is secondary. I mean, the right wing crucified me for this, but if I had to be a communist to develop a healthy race and protect my race, I'd be a communist. If I had to be a Nazi, I'd be a Nazi. If I'd be a fascist, a fascist. Anarchist, an anarchist. I don't particularly care the weapon as long as we get what we want. Boy, would the right wing have fun with that. Of course, the left wing, they give me a hard time, too. And the anarchists, they're mad because some of the anarchists are racist, too. And now they're going all over the place trying to prove they're not racist. They even attacked some of our friends in Washington a couple of weeks ago. Trying to prove they're not racist. So here's two groups that hate the government demonstrating before a government building out in the street rolling around in the dirt. Now, does that make sense to you? I think you guys out of your mind. You both hate the government, so attack the government. But identity is, actually identity did a lot of harm way back when it was British Israel, because it opened up the monarchy to Semitic, people. They began to marry into the royal family and so forth. And so, and Cromwell, of course, the edict of what, 1400, that excluded Jews from England. Cromwell made the deal with this, rabbi Ben somebody, over in Holland, that he would help him finance and pay for his occupation, that he would allow the Jews back into England under Cromwell. So that's allegedly what happened. But this British Israel thing was trying to say that the people of Israel were our cousins of the Anglo-Saxons. That is silly.
With the migration to the Caucasus.
Yeah. Actually, what we have here is most people that say they're Jews are not Semitic at all. They're Europeans. They've been assimilated into European genetics for hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years. And they came through Eastern Europe and they gradually melded in. And if Hitler had been smart, he'd have said okay to those people and just bounced the rest. But the first clue was he never went after the rich Jews. They got out. What was that all about? Was it those Jew bankers that got thrown in a concentration camp? It was the working class. Very suspicious.
Ranch down in New Orleans. They call the rising sun. It's been the ruin of many a poor boy and me. Oh, God, I'm one. Mama, she worked for a tailor man. She sold all my new blue jeans. And my daddy was a gambling man in the town of old New Orleans. Shuffle them cartridges. A suitcase or a trunk, and the only time he's ever satisfied is when he's on a drunk. Boys, fill up your glasses right to the brim, let the drinks flow merrily round. We'll drink to the health of a rounder poor boy who rambles from town to town. Now, fellas, don't believe what a bad woman tells you, though her eyes be blue or brown. Unless she's standing on some old scaffold high, same fellas, they won't let me come down. I've done, and to shun that old house down in New Orleans that they call the rising sun. Soon they'll take me back down to New Orleans to face all the crimes that I've done. Then they'll tie me to an old ball and chain until my earthly race is run.